Hey everyone, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. During each episode, we're diving headfirst into conversations with some of the most incredible RevOps leaders out there. We're taking things up a notch, getting deeper, having more fun, and as always, keeping it real. Remember our theme, RevOps Unboxed, and today we're unboxing it all. Let's get started. Hey everyone, Sandy Robinson here. I'm your host of RevOps Unboxed. I'm here with Dan Giovacchini. He is the COO and co-founder of Tango. I'm super excited to have you, Dan. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Sandy. And super impressed you just got my name in one try there. I've heard it's like an exotic gelato, perhaps, or you know, some fancy noodle in Italy that nobody's heard of. But you got it first time. So impressed.
I love it. Fancy noodles. That's what we talk about here today. This is exciting. You know, Dan, tell me a little bit about your background, you know, why you started Tango. You know, what got you to where you are today?
Yeah, thanks. So let's see, we're 5 years into Tango now. I came into Tango never actually having operated, and boy, was I in for a surprise. So I actually started my career in venture capital, and that's been referred to in certain circles as the dark side. and I've kind of learned the last few years why, and it is the dark side. But that's my background. You know, three of us co-founders, me, Ken, and Brian. Ken spent several years in really the hyper-growth phase at Uber, seeing everything that went right and everything went wrong, going from a few hundred people to, I think, 20,000. And Brian is our, you know, technical genius, creative, ADD, all over the place, mastermind behind our product. But my venture background, the one thing I will vouch for, even though, you know, I think there's a tremendous lack of insight and clarity from them on what it takes to build great businesses and do the hard work, you know, that we all do to, you know, to drive revenue engines and to make customers happy. The one thing in venture that you do see is this incredible landscape view of, you know, what's the purpose? Why are we here? What's happening at, you know, a super 50,000 foot level? Where are things going? And in that sense, it distills down into, you know, well, what is the purpose of a great company? And, you know, for them, it's create revenue. Because if you're creating revenue, you're pleasing customers, you're bringing something of value to the market. And when you boil it down that way, decisions seem easy, right? Like, oh, yeah, of course, open up Europe. And of course, like, add that new product line. And yeah, you know, Google's going to launch this thing. Microsoft's going to launch this thing. So, of course, you should go do this thing if you're in, you know, technology. And where that actually, you know, the flip side of that is just a total, like, lack of visibility and empathy into the rigor and operational excellence that's required to, you know, get from point A to point B, whatever phase you're at and what that means. But anyway, I came in, you know, we came into building Tango with those backgrounds and grand ambitions and big ideas. And, you know, we started the company and it was really about helping people learn on the job better. We felt like it was too hard to get good at what you do at work. Mm-hmm. And so we started building out a suite of tools, and you're happy to talk more about that later, but a suite of tools to help people to make work easier, and you know, specifically around software use.
I love it. And I love your story, particularly because, you know, I pushed back on having you here a little bit because I was like, you know, all right, you're the COO, you're the founder. But you really hit me when you talked about just building the revenue engine and understanding, you know, what it takes to build up a company, and, you know, how really revenue operations is the core of, you know, building a company and building something like Tango. And then the fact that you are also building a product that you're using along the way to do exactly that, it's kind of like a double whammy. So I really found that to be really interesting. And, you know, when you think about how you started out in, you know, getting things off the ground. I mean, they don't obviously call it bootstrapping for nothing. You know, what was your vision? Like, where did you start in terms of the revenue engine, the, you know, you think about the customer journey, you mentioned that the customer is ultimately what revenue is about, right? Making the customer happy. How did you start thinking about that and shaping it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we have an idea of how this works well today because we made every mistake in the book early on. And so you have to go through that process, I think, you know, to truly be able to kind of speak credibly or advise anybody on this topic. But, you know, the one thing we did try to set out to do, I think helped, is just the KISS framework. Do you know the KISS framework?
Is that the keep it simple, stupid?
Keep it simple, stupid. So,
yes.
I mean, when you're standing up a revenue motion, there's just a million things that can, you know, be considered: opportunities, risks, and, you know, oh, this tool, that tool, or, you know, oh yeah, we could have this meeting to dive into this. And oh my God, if you fall into any complexity traps, it just compounds and compounds and compounds. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was one thing we set out to do. I think it did help us to some degree, but we of course made lots of mistakes. The big tenets of, you know, what we do now and you know, what we help a lot of customers do, frankly, is try to put the customer journey at the center of all your systems, your processes, you know, even your headcount, right? Everything around the organization should basically mirror what your customer journey is. So that's another one. And then, you know, I think a third one I'll just throw in there for now is you have to build in ways to make sure you have continuous learning and continuous improvement. So especially early on, you know, for us, that was a lot of, ask those extra questions in onboarding forms and, you know, make space for the curiosity of like, oh, what if we didn't actually have that number of book meetings this week because of XYZ. Come up with those hypotheses, run them down, like, but kind of build that into your culture, to your meeting cadence, to your expectations of workload for folks. Because when you're figuring out and standing up that motion, like, that's the time to figure it out. When you're scaling and like going from, you know, whatever it is, 10 sellers to 30, that is not the time you're going to have the luxury to be curious. So especially in those early days, you know, really stay close to that customer journey, keep it simple, and like build in that space for curiosity to like deeply understand why certain things happen or why they might go certain ways.
That's great advice, because it's so easy. I've seen it, you know, jumping into different, you know, varying stages of startups to, you know, start a revenue organization. And it happens so quickly where, hey, maybe there's four founders and each one of them likes a different tool. So they go out and buy their own tool because they're the founders and they're doing, and like, before you know it, within a year, you have like, already like a Frankenstein tech stack, and like kind of you're already creating your own silos, and it really does happen quickly. So I love your advice of, you know, KISS is great. It's a great foundational just way to think about things as simple as possible, but then laying it over the customer journey in at each stage of the customer journey, and that level sets it, because when you do have, you've got a lot of personalities that get up into C-suite roles, right? And everyone knows what they're doing. You know, everyone's got the D, they're a D on a disc. Like, you know, 90% of the time they're Ds. Occasionally you have like an S or a C in that environment, and that's different. But, you know, everyone knows what they're doing. They all know they're right. So that it's a great way to level set and say, hey guys, we're here about the customer. Where does this fit in? Where does this tool fit in? Where does this person fit in? Where is enablement needed? Like, I love that you said that, because it's easy to just try to say, okay, we checked this box, we put this process in place, but then we're never going to talk about it again.
I mean, that's the thing. There's other ways to say this or manifest it or live it out, right? But it's like, you know, keep the main thing, And it should always really be the customer. You know, if you want to be any kind of successful, great organization, you're customer centric, you're not product centric, you're not technology centric, you're not the way we work centric, you need to map all of that other stuff back to the customer, and just keep that front and center. And then, you know, for leaders, and leaders can be COO, C-suite, but it can be, you know, anybody that's prepping and leading parts of meetings. And for them, you know, it's build in the expectations, build in the drumbeat of, you know, okay, this is how we talk about, you know, revenue, results, forecasts. So that's a mindset thing. And, you know, sometimes we lose sight of it, but that's where people, I think, like, early leadership, early standing up motions, figuring out, you know, the next phase for your company, whatever that might mean. That's your job, is to sort of set that beacon. And you can do that from bottom up too.
I love it. Yeah. Talk about the bottom up. So for people listening, you know, what are some of your, you know, non-negotiables when you think of like the go-to-market motion and things like that, people that might be in varying functions of the go-to-market function or motion or revenue operations, what are some non-negotiables that you have?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have this framework that we kind of use in feedback and in, you know, performance reviews, career planning, career development discussions, and it's called impact players versus typical contributors. And okay. So one way to answer your question about non-negotiables, at least where my mind went, that's something across the team is, how are you being an impact player? And there's a little bit more of, you know, a managerial level. But I think an awesome mindset, for anyone at a company and leaders included. And, you know, what that means is, do you just do the job description? Do you wait for instructions to be told what to do? Do you have a cover your ass mentality, which, you know, we all have these things at various moments. But the alternative is, you know, you look for ways to lead. You take agency. You attack problems that haven't been brought up yet that you discovered. And so, you know, that's non-negotiable for us as far as values and, you know, highlighting and recognizing that's usually the best way to help reinforce behavior and teach that kind of thing. But it's like the perfect roadmap to career development, success, whatever that is, whatever that means for a person. If you can go be an impact player, if you can make your boss's job easier, if you can always point your activity to impact for the company. It's hard work. It doesn't always get recognized immediately, but that's how you're going to learn. That's how you're going to grow. That's how you're going to actually drive results at the end of the day when you're looking back, what did this person do, you know, to help the company? That's like the North Star. That's non-negotiable. And I think it spans kind of a, you know, a lot of areas.
I think that, I love that. I mean, in that really is, it starts with the interviewing process. It starts with the founders and how you lead, leading by example in the way that that drives the company culture, right? Like, I would imagine in your world, it's okay to make a mistake if that's what you're trying to do, right? You're trying to create impact. You're thinking in an innovative way, and then there's that accountability aspect too. So I think, I mean, look, RevOps in general, just to relate that to RevOps, is like, you have to be an impact player because most people don't get what RevOps is or the revenue engine, and they don't see it that holistically, right? So, and as somebody coming into a startup or like, you know, even a large established billion-dollar company that's never had RevOps, you have to be innovative. You have to be an impact player and, you know, put yourself out there. you can't hide, you can't, this job is, you can't hide behind a box checky thing. You know, that is a different type of work. That's a different, you know, you want to be a box checker. That's not the kind of thing you want to do. So, you know, it comes down to that, you know, that drive, that self-motivation and willingness to put yourself out there. So I think a lot of it has to do with that, you know, kind of personality too.
With great power comes great responsibility. That's the blessing, you know, or the curse, depending how you look at it, of RevOps. There is no more important role right now with the way go-to-market motions are changing constantly, the way, you know, if you're in technology, you know, the importance of being able to help adapt your revenue motion based on all the changes that are happening there. The tooling you use is the other side of it, the systems, the competitive advantages you can gain around data and around customer experience. There's just like, you know, no greater opportunity for a position to like have impact on revenue at companies, and blessing and a curse, because, you know, it is a lot of responsibility when you think about it like that. It's also like, there's the, you know, the high and low concept, which like, you know, I think great leaders, right, they can go high, they can be strategic, they can be visionary, they can understand the big picture, and they can go low and do the work. And that's RevOps, right? That's right. Like, it is a leadership position just fundamentally by that nature of, you don't get the luxury of not being able to do, you know, one of those. You mm-hmm. have to be able to dive in like a, you know, a bird with a long beak going in for the fish to like attack a problem. And then you have to be able to come up high, see the forest through the trees, understand, you know, where to prioritize, understand the biggest risks and opportunities. And that's hard. But, you know, for people who want to make impact, it's like a dream setup.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the way you said that in the communication from there. So being able to, because a lot of times you're a rev ops of one, you know, especially in a company where you're starting out, right, standing up a function. Yeah. And so you have to be able to dig in, but then you have to be able to sell up across the organization, communicate the value, break through the noise and all of that stuff. And you mentioned the technology changing. And I mean, it's literally like, I was two years out of Salesforce in HubSpot. And then I'm just putting in a Salesforce implementation. And in 2 years, I mean, mind blowing difference in changes. And lot of that is all AI. So tell me, from your perspective, how should go-to-market RevOps leaders, anybody in this world, be thinking about AI and how to stay ahead of it, the art of the possible? You know, if you could share some insights, that would be great.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it used to kind of be the case where you could wait for the annual conference that you go to, you know, whichever one you pick, and kind of hear what people are talking about and then think about it 6-9 months, you know, wait to kind of see somebody talk about it on LinkedIn, see a case study. And then, you know, maybe you kind of make the case internally, oh, we need this tool, or we should switch to this, or I don't think you can do that anymore. Like, if you try to, it's just, you're too far behind. You're too late. You're trying to learn about stuff. And you're behind the eight ball when you kind of needed something yesterday, in terms of like what's possible and, you know, what the best available is. So, you know, that's like, okay, we talked about needing to go high, be strategic about your revenue motion, being able to go low, solve problems, enable other people, do the work. And there's this piece, you know, of you kind of have to stay educated and curious and just interested in like, okay, let me understand, you know, how this technology works. You know, let me understand some basics about AI. So I can build my mental map of, you know, the types of things it will be good at. And, you know, yeah, you should be taking a couple demos. I mean, I'm biased. We sell, a solution that goes to RevOps, but we talk to a lot of people who are like, you know, hey, we're just here to learn. We've heard really good things about your product. You know, we're not quite sure if we have a problem yet to solve. Could you spend 20, 30 minutes with us and not just tell us about your tool, tell us about the other ones, tell us about the market. You can be pretty directive with vendors. You know, you can make it worth your time so you're not just sitting through a demo. But the idea here is you need to go learn what's possible. I think that's the starting place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's tough too, because in anyone's existing tech stack, there's add-ons, like things that are just showing up in some cases, like, there's a new bot. Like I can ask it something, or they're, you know, hey, you can turn on this add-on. And so there's so much of it out there. Companies are building, you know, tools internally. Like if you're a SaaS company and you've got developers, like they're also making cool shit for the team, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of it out there. And, you know, there's a messaging component, some of the Gen AI, but you can obviously use that for other purposes in terms of saving you time or enablement or your tech. What I'm finding to be a challenge, it's almost like whack-a-mole, like another one pops up here, another one pops up here. And instead of just aligning the tech stack on the bow tie, how are you aligning all of the Gen AI tools across the breadth of the organization? The bigger the company, the more tools, the more little bots that are out there, and everyone's asking it the same question and coming up with different answers. So like, that's what I'm running into. And I know a lot of people, and, you know, so it's good in a sense that there's a lot of opportunity, but it just is really a game changer in the way you're approaching your tech stack as a RevOps leader. Like it is completely 100% not the same as 1 year ago today, 100%. And 1 year ago, we listened to this podcast, 1 year ago, 1 year forward from today, it's going to be completely different again. So how do you suggest like people approach this? You know, just any sort of AI, Gen AI, in terms of the GTM tech stack?
Yeah, it's a confusing time. And when, you know, the status quo gets shaken up, I think people need to like go back to first principles. You need to build your market map or your model of, you know, your tech stack. And there's new categories now, right? And like, exactly like you're saying, you know, Clay is a decent example. If folks are familiar with Clay, this idea that you can have like a data personalization enrichment engine that, you know, powers your different go-to-market tools, like it's a new idea entirely. So I think it's, you know, you do need to kind of do that work of, let me take a step back, you know, let me build the model of, you know, the different types of tools. Okay, we have this for this, we have this for that. These new things, where do they fit in? You know, what are they helping accomplish? Map them to, you know, your unique go-to-market, your revenue motion, and what it helps solve, and map it to your customer journey. You know, those things we talked about earlier. So I think it's like more of, in times of uncertainty, in times of like a lot of change, you kind of need to build your own just mental model of, you know, what's possible and what's available. And I will say too, like, you know, ChatGPT, like game changing, like once in a lifetime kind of, you know, just like, whoa, this thing is out here. It can do so much. How do we use it? It's kind of like the new spreadsheets, I think about, where you're going to like start to rely on it for a lot of things, random ad hoc usage. Mm-hmm. And then like kind of what's the goal of, you know, buying a lot of software the last 10 or 15 years? It's like to get off of spreadsheets for certain things, right?
Right.
And so we're going to go through this phase of like, okay, we're all using ChatGPT, and then we kind of need to understand how and why we're using it, and like where we're, you know, not being secure and how we're using it, or where, you know, it's inefficient because we're actually like trying to recreate prompts or, you know, recreate certain processes and everybody's doing it differently. And so that'll be opportunity over time to look at where you're like, your instincts go to like use AI, you know, ChatGPT for something, and recognize like where other people on the team are doing it. Mm-hmm. And then that's like, okay, you know, ding, 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 ding. Like, you know, at some point we can formalize with a better solution here.
AI is everywhere. Everyone's talking about it. Every sales team wants it, but let's be real. AI is only as good as the data and systems behind it. If you're a CRO, you need the right AI to drive real revenue impact. You need forecasts you can trust, cleaner data, and a sales team that's actually selling, not stuck wrestling with their CRM all day. And if you're in RevOps, you didn't sign up to be a CRM tech support, but here you are, cleaning up bad data, fixing broken workflows, and chasing reps to follow processes. That's where Tango comes in. Tango is your AI-powered CRM admin. It automates deal updates, enforces pipeline rules, and eliminates manual data entry so your team can finally focus on revenue, not busy work. And that isn't just hype. Tango has powered over 3 million workflows and is trusted by companies like Walmart, Roche, Cox Communications, and Lockheed Martin. No more chasing reps. No more sales ops drowning in support tickets. Just faster deal cycles, better data, and forecasts you can actually trust. Ready to stop fighting your CRM? See Tango in action at tango.ai/sales. That's tango.ai/sales. So what does that look like at Tango? Like your tech stack, your go-to-market, you know, if you don't, and if you can't use names of other tools, I mean, obviously use other tools besides just your own, but what's your stack look like? How are you approaching that? And, you know, just curious, like, cause you seem to have like, you obviously have a really good hold on what needs to be done. You're very much entrenched in this. So I'm just curious on your, you know, what you guys are doing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm happy to share specific tools. So we're HubSpot Foundation. We do use, you know, Stripe to its fullest extent, you know, more on the kind of finance side of RevOps. Mm-hmm. But we take advantage of a lot of their new functionality. We use, you know, Clearbit got bought by HubSpot, so it's getting integrated, but we heavily rely on that for enrichment. And then Chili Piper, you know, we're a big inbound kind of motion. So that actually powers like one of the most critical moments of our customer journey. And, you know, we've had a couple hiccups with them. So, you know, we talk with them a fair amount, but those are some of the core pieces. And then, you know, we make a lot of use of our own product. So Tango, that gets our processes on lockdown. It helps us automate, you know, certain work in those other tools. And then, you know, I think for RevOps, for any team, you need to be using kind of Sheets and Excel. We've used some of the forecasting and whatnot. And I think you grow into those over time. Mm-hmm. And we're not quite there yet.
Are you guys recording your calls at all and embedding that yet? Or
yeah. Yeah. So I feel like that's been a super hot one the last couple months.
That's why I asked. You know, in that like
echo chamber of, but yeah, we use Grain, which I think is one of the more, you know, basic ones. But great category. And we can actually use Tango to do some things that, you know, Gong and some of these newer ones, Fathom, Win AI can do. But, that's a great example to our earlier discussion of what's a new category that's maybe is existing, but like suddenly, whoa, it's capable of going, filling out your CRM and like tracking insights that you haven't actually been able to track before. And you can bring to meetings and those should be discussion topics, you know, on the revenue team.
Yep.
So we're using Grain and Tango for that, you know, right now, but big category to pay attention to.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're pretty lean though, in terms of your tech stack, which I think is, you know, there's been a general consolidation effort, you know, after every bell and whistle came out during COVID and, you know, all the shiny objects out there. I think over the last probably year and a half or so, there's maybe even two, just a general consolidation effort. And then because a lot of these companies are adding things like call recording and their Gen AI components, you're able to kind of do that and check the boxes, like get some of the functionality. It may not be as good as the other tool that's their core functionality, but I'm okay with it because I don't have to change the behavior and it's all in one tool, right? Like Zoom's a great example. I went with ZRA, which is their recording tool.
Yeah.
It did, you know, enough of what I needed and the whole company already had Zoom Pro. And so I don't have to change behavior. It's a little add-on and, you know, it's got some quirks and things that, you know, I give feedback on, but it works great for what I need it to do. So it's always about trade-offs and making that text selection and controlling what's coming in to the fold in your CRM and all of that.
We should stay on this for a second because I think super important tip. We've talked with a lot of folks about this is you want to limit your sources of truth as much as possible. So what does that mean? You know, is everything flowing through your CRM and keeping your CRM as the basis of truth for your customer journey and, you know, every interaction and activity and insight? If you're buying tools where you're suddenly going to rely on them, and I'll pick on a couple, for example, awesome tools, Gong and Clary. But if you're putting foundational sources of truth, insights, or doing key activities in there, that is the step towards, you know, oh shoot, we are suddenly pushing workflows and processes into more tools. It makes our enablement, you know, infinitely more difficult. Integrations and APIs, you know, while a lot of them are great and, you know, native, quote unquote, you're not going to be able to port over everything you want. It's not ever fully bidirectional in the way we ever dream about. And so when you add more sources of truth, that's when you look and you step back and you're like, whoa, we got bloated. Like, how did this happen? Mm-hmm. Whereas the difference is if you're looking at tools, you know, that work in the background, that don't require, you know, end users to come in and get familiar and learn something new. It doesn't require processes, you know, to change in as substantial ways. You know, those are easier ones to add. But that sources of truth thing has been helpful for sort of saying like, you know, okay, it sounds great what they're saying in theory, but in practice, we're going to get killed if we try to, you know, put more people into another system or more key process.
100%. And that is exactly why I made the decisions that I made in terms of what we were just talking about, the call recording, because I'm putting a new instance of Salesforce in. I don't want people going to other shiny objects. Everything I'm building is in Salesforce at the opportunity record. And if it can't do that with, you know, a managed package or an out of the box, you know, on the AppExchange, I'm saying no. And I have the ability to do that because guess what? I have a fresh, brand new, clean instance and I'm not going to muddy it up. And so that those decisions are, I think, really critical in asking, I hate using the term vendors, partners, whatever, asking you guys, like, not just does it integrate to my CRM, but how does it integrate? Like, what does that mean? You know, just had a conversation with a marketing leader that got a platform. The rep closed him on, you know, hey, it integrates. Yeah, it integrates, blah, blah, blah. And then it kind of, the train left the station before I got here. So like, you know, I'm reading the instructions. I'm like, yeah, everybody's going to say it. This is an integration, but this is like a whole project, you know, and then this is ongoing maintenance. I don't want that. Like, that is not a thing. I don't want somebody living in there and I don't want to have to maintain this connection because I want somebody to go into Salesforce and it works. Or when I was in a HubSpot shop, it was very, you know, trimmed down the tools that, you know, even more limited with HubSpot, and you know which ones they are that work well with it. And you're not having to do all that level of, you know, getting developers and writing code and third-party applications that have to do the stuff. Like, it, to me, that's just, you know, the bigger you get, obviously some of that's unavoidable, but yeah, I see you kind of smiling. So, you know, I've been wondering, how does Tango, you know, my perception of Tango a little bit was like, you know, is this trying to replace RevOps or an admin, or is it just trying to help them? And like, what can that do? Cause like for me, you know, that's the part I don't love about my job, is having to get in and, you know, make changes, make configurations and stuff. Like, I want to be doing other things. So, you know, what problem does it solve?
Yeah. And, I'll just give you the reason I was smiling quick, cause you made me think as you were talking through, you know, these integrations that never go as you plan. And have you seen, I feel like it's gone viral in different social platforms at different moments, but people might know what I'm referring to here, is you have the guy who's got a chocolate fountain in front of him, and he tries mm-hmm. to put cheese in the chocolate fountain, and you can see the thing like start to spin and it goes okay. out of control, and he can't stop it. And like his eyes, you can see him getting, and it's like just one of the most hilarious videos.
I'll have to find it, but I get the idea, because it just literally does turn into a shit show so quickly, because it can get out of control. And, you know, some salespeople are great. They're not, you know, the buyers aren't the technical buyers that are in the process. They're the people with the budget. You know, they own the marketing budget, they own the sales budget, and oh yeah, we need this tool for this. Yeah, they said it integrates to HubSpot. Well, that's a loaded question with HubSpot, because you know, the selection is narrow of what tools really are applications within HubSpot. And, you know, Salesforce obviously have a broader selection, but it's still true, right? It is completely different to say it integrates. And so that happens so quickly. And it just takes marketing person signed a contract, or, you know, the project manager signed a contract for a new project management tool. And you're like, dude, like, hey, what's happening here? And it's so fast. And then you're in a contract for 2 years, you know, 3 years,
and you're like,
something like
do?
That. Yeah. And you're like, either you got to eat it or you got to figure it out and build it.
Yeah. It happens. It happens too much. I mean, so this is, you know, part of the approach we took actually in building our product, and, you know, thanks for asking about it. But it's that it comes back to, so RevOps specifically in the CRM, we're all very familiar with being dependent on our Salesforce admins, our developers, our, you know, IT teams to make some foundational changes. And sometimes it's even just setting up an integration. Sometimes it's, you know, changing a validation rule, something basic, or, you know, looking to add a property. If it's something that like your engineering and internal team is, you know, can we get product usage data into our CRM? Like, that one's going to take even longer. I mean, you kind of see where mm-hmm. I'm getting to.
Mm-hmm.
There's this dependence on, you know, IT and developers, and we don't want to make their lives more difficult, you know, to ask them to do stuff. But that's part of the reason we get into this, like, you know, tech stack hell, is when you need that integration, or you need that extra work to make these new tools or make this AI have the impact that you want it to. And so when we're building our product, you know, one thing we've built in is that it's truly no code. It's not even flowcharts. It's not even anything that you would look at and, you know, need to be technical at all. And it doesn't require you to go to an IT team to make changes. And so the way that works is we're actually a browser extension. So we can come on top, you can create overlays, you can create enablement, you can create actual processes and walkthroughs, or you can create automations that actually kind of help any CRM user go through and do those critical, you know, pipeline updating activities, or, you know, critical, okay, we've updated this key process, you know, post call, or, you know, in sending quotes out, we in RevOps have changed something, and you can just go and put that in front of the end user, one click, it automates in front of them. And so in this way, and it's a browser agent, we're calling it your team's personal CRM admin. We're actually, you know, launching this big publicly in the next couple of weeks. But in this way, what you're doing is you're not replacing RevOps, you're not replacing even the IT team, but you're giving the business team, the revenue team, the ability to go and configure key process changes and, you know, bring AI into your busy work, the stuff that has to happen, you know, for customers to get follow-up emails, to research those meetings, to progress opportunities or deals in the pipeline, to send quotes out. It's allowing you to go impact all that work without code, just doing it as an overlay, as an AI agent on top. And, you know, that gets into a little bit more of what we do, but the foundational thing being there is like, if you have this friction of like, we need to go to IT and, you know, we need to have something customized or built, and you bring that out of RevOps, out of business, you're just really limited in the impact you can have. You're dependent on others. And, you know, you don't want to ask your end users to go to another source of truth either. So
no, that's interesting. Or even for smaller, like one person operations in RevOps, where they're having to rely on other resources within the organization, contractors, things like that. It sounds like there could be some definite opportunity there. I mean, at the end of the day, I think you said, you know, you talked about it being about the customer. And to me, that's removing friction. So when it takes time to update a process, to administer something, you know, everybody's got their submit request form, right, to RevOps on the stuff they want done. Sales manager wants to add this field, or we need to roll out this new process. And, you know, also we need to think about enablement. So it's, you know, anything that's removing friction and staying core to the CRM, to keeping your tech stack tight, I think is important to consider, especially as you are strained for resources, which, you know, we all are. Getting headcount is just like, I mean, that is like a monumental thing at even companies in growth mode, like you still have to, you have to justify it. And anytime, what I've found, if it's not a quota carrying role, it's very difficult to go to you, Dan, COO, and convince you like, I need to get an admin, or I need to get an analyst, or I need to get this. But it's a lot easier to go to you and say, hey, I need XYZ budget for this tool. Here's the value it's going to bring to us. And by the way, it's easy to set up. And, you know, and or, so those, yep.
Or, I mean, that's great, right? What we see people have a lot of success with, and helps really frame it, you know, for those decision makers is, look, we're having this problem, or we have this company objective and this team goal. Here's what's preventing us from hitting it, or, you know, here's some data that shows what we could accomplish, you know, if we could do XYZ. Normally to go do this, I would need to go hire these three people or this headcount and this role. I know we don't have budget for that. I know that bringing in additional, you know, people, and the thing with like bringing on people, we love people. We love, you know, more cheery, awesome people in our Slack and Zoom and offices. But it's like overhead, right? Cause it's like, you got to train people. You got to like, you know, help, somebody's got to manage, it's, you know, more meetings. It's, and then like on the cost side, you know, not that we want to go there, but like, you know, people need benefits and salaries and like,
it's
like all this overhead.
it's not a 5x OTE like when you're bringing in a new AE, right?
Exactly.
Like it's a cost. It's an overhead cost.
It's that. And so when you're framing and, you know, you say, look, I would have had to, you know, we would have to do this to actually solve this problem or, you know, generate this opportunity. Instead, you know, we can, you know, purchase this add-on and we can upgrade our HubSpot or Salesforce, or instead we can, you know, actually buy this tool. It'll be a fraction of the cost. And we think the ROI case will be XYZ based on, you know, this data. So I think that's the right mindset. Not that we want to avoid headcount, avoid, right, you know, replacing people, but it's like, we're limited, you know, and, mm-hmm, and here's how we can make do with that.
Yeah. I mean, and this is just great perspective from, you know, somebody who approves that, a COO, is, you know, your perception of, you bring the problem, here's the problem to solve. We can go about it this way. Here's a more efficient way. Or maybe there's an in the middle way. Like, yeah, we'd love to have the three people. We know we can't have that now. Maybe that's over time, you know, as we build up when we get to X revenue. But here are a couple other options. And then communicating the value. Like, this is just really great just from your mind for people, because I think sometimes, depending on the world RevOps people come from, like, we all come from different places and get to RevOps. Every single person I have on this podcast has a different background and got to RevOps. I was on the sales side and I enablement and I taught sales training and, you know, all of that stuff. So I try to leverage those skills to sell internally. And that's the part I think that's important to develop those skills, is how do you make your case, just as if you're closing a deal, right? How do you make the case? Right. Here's the pain. Here's the problem to solve. Here are a couple of options to solve it. This is the one we recommend because it's going to, you know, help with whatever initiative you're working on. So how do you tie it to the COO's initiative, to the quarterly goal, to the annual goal? You know, specifically those metrics, right? What is that going to gain out of it? So it's not perceived as an overhead. So that's just really, I think for people listening, like, really take what Dan is saying to heart here, because it can help you navigate internally in your organization how to align leadership and demonstrate that you're a strategic partner to the COO, to the CRO, to the CEO, in positioning things this way, and not just kind of whining about, like, well, I need to get a person, you know. It's like, well, you know, that's yeah, why we hired you. Right.
Exactly. So, really well
so said. I love it. You know, I guess just to wrap up here, you know, if people listening, you've really dropped a lot of really great things, like, you know, KISS, focusing on the customer, and just how to position yourselves, how to look at AI. What are a couple of just key takeaways that you think would be great for people that you could leave? Or maybe it's something that you say in your own company. I'd love for you to share as we wrap up here.
Yeah, I mean, parting thoughts. I think the big thing is just look at, like, the big picture of what's changing, and you know, try to get the main things right. It kind of comes back to that, right? So AI is changing a ton. Somewhere in your personal goals for the year, and, you know, if you're managing a team, somewhere in your team's goals this year, you just need to understand what's possible. You don't need to rush into anything. You know, you don't need to force it or have FOMO in the sense of, like, we need to buy something now. But that's a big thing that's going to change your company, whether it's in the next couple of years, and it's going to change your career path. So you should be duly motivated on that front. And, you know, the other one is maybe even a little bit of a different take is, you know, pandemic happened. We went more remote. The way LinkedIn is changed, you know, especially for the RevOps community, the, you know, different Slack and Discords out there. And, you know, people are all know the main ones on the RevOps side. You know, be active there. That's where you're going to hear and learn. And, you know, you've done an amazing job with this podcast, right? Making practitioners' voices heard. So I just think there's something there too, where because technology is changing a lot, because revenue motions are changing a ton, because the RevOps role itself, you know, has just continued to morph each year, and each year is the fastest growing profession according to LinkedIn, you know, 2023, which is mind blowing. Like, you should just be social and like get in that external information. Don't just rely on your managers. Don't just rely on, you know, what's going on at your company. You know, maybe a little bit scattered there, but I think just, you know, try to really understand what's possible. You know, keep it simple. The most important things, how does it affect our customer journey? How does it affect our selling motion? And then, you know, yeah, just like this whole RevOps community and being online, and that's where like the genius ideas and the newest, you mentioned like HubSpot shipping like a million things, you know, every week, and they do a great job sharing there. It's just like, that's where people are learning now. That's where you should engage and make sure to spend some time.
Man, this was great, Dan. Just some really great insights, and I just appreciate you sharing and just having this discussion. So thank you for being on the podcast. I'm sure everybody's going to love the episode. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Andy. This was a blast.
This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed in partnership with the Revenue Operations Alliance. Until next time, keep unboxing.